This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Sometimes you get lucky and the actual news lines up with what you've got planned for the news to be. With the big primaries last night in the rearview mirror, today is one of those days. Trade has been the big economic issue this time around. Capital T, B, I, and E there. Thanks largely to Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, who regularly blast trade in general and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the big pending trade deal, in particular, every chance they get. Trade-friendlier candidates Hillary Clinton and John Kasich notably won in Ohio yesterday, but this primary season has at times felt like a referendum on free trade policies. That makes us really glad that we included a section on trade in the latest version of the Marketplace Edison Research poll, which is out this week. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is our trade guru. She is here to walk us through the trade data. Tracy, first of all, what is, the biggest thing that jumped out at you?
Well, to start, almost half of people said they actually didn't know enough to say whether free trade agreements are good or bad for the U.S. economy. And that's, you know, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. What about the ones who said they did know about free trade?
Okay, so of the people who did answer, two-thirds said they think free trade agreements are good for the U.S. economy. But honestly, when I started calling people back after the poll to see why they'd answered how they'd answered, you know, there was this wide range of understanding about how trade and trade agreements work. Lots of people maybe should have been in that first category of not understanding.
Yeah. Give me a for instance.
So, you know, obviously we don't want to put too much stock in any one answer, which is why we poll so many people. But I was hearing stuff like, you know, one guy wanted to go back to a system where we produce everything we consume, and he thought that would make stuff cheaper. Another person said he didn't see how trade even affected him or anyone in the middle class. He didn't think he'd bought anything made in another country.
Which just isn't the way global economies work, right?
Right. I mean, his TV, his cell phone, his clothes, all probably made in other countries. And that brings us to some other of the poll results. People were more likely to disagree than agree with the statement that free trade helps their own personal financial situation. And that kind of speaks to how hard it can be for people to feel or recognize the benefits of trade. I ran that by Susan Ariel Aronson. She's a professor at George Washington's Elliott School of International Affairs. And she said, trade is complex, and we tend to oversimplify it.
Policymakers tend to talk about trade in mercantilist terms. And so exports good, imports bad, right? But the truth is you can't produce anything in the United States without some imports.
You know, we don't tend to look at our stuff and say, thanks, trade. But when someone loses a job in an industry where imports are increasing, that is just much more visible. So you can think of trade theory as having two parts, says Howard Rosen. He's the executive director of the Trade Adjustment Assistance Coalition. The first is opening borders, usually lowering tariffs on foreign goods, often with a trade agreement. And that creates more competition, which typically lowers prices. And in econo-speak, it can free up resources, says Rosen.
Now, that's a nice way of saying that there's unemployment, people moving out of redundant industries, but we are also opening up foreign markets to U.S. producers. So you would expect to see a shift of those redundant resources into the expanding parts of the economy. And that is the problem in the United States.
That movement of workers from shrinking industries into expanding ones, Rosen says that's where the theory breaks down in practice. Gordon Hansen is an economist at UC San Diego. He's long studied how trade impacts labor markets.
The first thing we learned was, hey, when you want to talk about labor mobility, it's one thing to talk about software programmers who kind of move seamlessly between Austin and Silicon Valley and Boston and wherever. It's quite another thing to talk about workers with a high school education or less who started off in a factory job.
Hansen says a lot of that has to do with the regional nature of economies in the U.S. If you're a furniture maker in Raleigh-Durham, for example, and you lost your job, it may be really tough for you to find a new one in your area. Hansen looked at the impact of increasing Chinese imports on the U.S. labor force and found the adjustment period for workers was just a lot bigger than economists had assumed.
You get persistently higher unemployment rates and persistently higher rates of non-participation in the labor force for a full decade after the shock has hit.
A full decade after this surge of Chinese imports. And this is where you might say, yeah, close those borders. And that is exactly what we shouldn't do, says Hansen. He says we need to look inward to better support workers who lose their jobs, to help them retrain or relocate or create incentives for other firms to hire them. He says the support we do offer is just not good enough.
All right, Tracy, thanks. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson there on the trade desk for us. I don't know, maybe we should get one of those. Her reporting was driven by the results of the Marketplace Edison Research poll, as I said, the full results of which you can dig into on our website. And while you're there, take a second, do our quiz, see where you fall on the economic anxiety curve. It'll make sense when you get there. It's marketplace.org.